This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This week's Sedra, Medrash Rabbah in Parsha Yevamo, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Posach, Omad v'imoydeh eretz. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai opened with a pasuk from Habakkuk that the Ribbono shel Olam stood and measured the land. What did he measure? Says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Modar HaKadosh Baruch Hu kol ha'umas. Ribbono shel Olam measured all the nations. Olo imotso umo shoyso ru'uyo lekabelus ha'toro el ador ha'midbo. And the Ribbono shel Olam found no nation fit to receive the Torah other than the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert. Modad HaKadosh Baruch Hu kol hehorim. The Ribbono shel Olam measured all the mountains. Olo imotso hor shetinosin boyos ha'Torah el Sinai. And he did not find the mountain worthy of having the Torah given on it other than Mount Sinai. Modad HaKadosh Baruch Hu kol ha'ayoros. The Ribbono shel Olam measured all the cities. Leimotso ir sheyibonim bebeis hamikdash ela Yerushalayim. Ela Yerushalayim. The Ribbono shel Olam measured all the cities and found many more suitable to be, for the beis hamikdash to be built in it, but Yerushalayim. Modad HaKadosh Baruch Hu kol ha'arotzis. Leimotso eretz sheruyo linotzim liYisrael ela eretz Yisrael. That's a different day we're talking about giving it to Yisrael. And that's the Ribbono shel Olam found Eretz Yisrael as the one most suited to give to Yisrael. What does it mean that the Ribbono shel Olam measured? What do you measure? Took out a tape measure and measured the dimensions? What's that got to do with it? If he wanted to know the dimensions, Ribbono shel Olam doesn't have to measure. He knows the dimensions of everything. And if it's the dimensions, what's that got to do with it? He measured to find out, what's the lotion measure? You test to find out. You analyze to find out. But measure means you measure the dimensions. He wants to know who to give the Torah to, what mountain to give the Torah to, where to build the Beis HaMikdash. He measures. What is the lotion of measuring? It's that word which we're going to try and understand. How Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai attributes the act of measurement to the Ribbono shel Olam as a means of determining who and where the Torah should be given. The Rambam brings the well-known Chazal in Hilchos Talmud Torah on the third period, and he says, "Divrei Torah nimshulu kamoyim." The words of Torah are compared to water. Shene'mar havei kol tzamo l'chul l'mayim. Lo'imar l'cho, to teach you. Ma mayim eino miskantim b'mokur madruim, elo nizcholim me'olov miskantim b'mokur mashborim. Just as water does not gather on high slopes, but it flows down and gathers in the valleys beneath, in the collecting places beneath, kach divrei Torah einam nimtzoim begasei haruach, so words of Torah are not found in Gas Ruach is a person of coarse spirit, a person of arrogance. Veloi belev kol gevelev, and not in the hearts of high-hearted people. Elo bedake v'shofel ruach, only in a lowly-spirited person, shemisabek be'ofor raglei hechachomim, who cleaves to the dust of the feet of the chachomim, and he removes the desires and pleasures of time from his heart. If he had nothing to eat, but if he has what to eat, it doesn't work. And what does he do with the rest of the day and the night? Doesn't do nothing. He's learning Torah. And we've developed this concept to quite a degree in recent of the Tanakh Shirim of the ladies on Shabbos morning. And I want to complete it and use that, in fact, as our key to understanding our Medrash. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Talmud Torah, these are laws, the Rambam, this is not his book of philosophy, this is the Halachas. In Hilchos Talmud Torah and the laws of learning Torah, the Rambam tells us, because it's Halacha L'maaseh, we need to know this, that just as water cannot be found in high places, so Torah cannot be found in, and the Halacha L'maaseh is twofold. A, you must know not to go looking for it there. So it's valuable information. If you're looking for water, says the Rambam, you're not going to go climbing on the slopes. You'll try to, you'll find in the valleys, that's where you'll find water collecting. Likewise, if you're looking for Torah, the Rambam warns, check the character of the person. Don't necessarily go to the places where it appears. That's not where you're going to find the water gathered. Check the character. If you're looking for the Talmid Chacham, check the character and try and find somebody who's a shofel ruach, somebody who's humble and cleaves to the dust of the feet of Chacham. That's where you'll find Torah. The second area of Halacha L'maaseh is applies to ourselves, of course. But somehow we have to develop that humility if we want Torah to collect in us. If we want to be containers of Torah, it is necessary for that to occur. Now this is a most amazing concept because it goes against our total understanding of knowledge. And we need to understand it this evening. How does this work? Because as far as we're used to knowledge, particularly nowadays, when knowledge and information management are being confused, and in fact the pursuit of knowledge hardly exists today anymore, except in Yechidim, here and there you'll find rare individuals who are really pursuing knowledge. Mostly people are not pursuing knowledge, they're pursuing information. And the art of handling that information. Even universities no longer train in knowledge. There used to be a time where you had to become educated before they would allow you to take your degree. And that was originally the idea of a BA in the great universities. A BA was just to get an education. People used to take Latin and Greek and classics of various sorts, which had nothing to do with the career they wanted to take eventually. They had to have knowledge first. Not the ideas, not facts, not information. Knowledge, education. Both in the secular world and, unfortunately, also the danger exists in the Torah world, that chokhmah, knowledge, bina, is being confused with the accumulation of factual information. And even in knowledge, it's difficult for us to understand that the character of the person will affect the quality of his knowledge. Because in the secular world, that doesn't apply. You can have a real rotter, a no goodnik, who's wicked in every way in his personal life and public life. He's a genius, absolute genius. And he produces the most wonderful works. And he's the expert in his field, worldwide. And there's no stila, the one doesn't affect the other. We're used to seeing that, it doesn't bother us anymore. The Rambam warns in Torah that doesn't work. In Torah, the character of the person is as much a determinant of the quality of his knowledge as is the knowledge itself. And that you cannot find Torah in a gevelev. If the person is a gevelev, if he's a haughty person, then what he presents as Torah, you know, is not Torah. It doesn't go there. There is no Torah there. So they're quoting texts that they've heard, but that's not Torah. You won't find Torah there at all. You need to understand why not. Because our difficulty in understanding that means we don't understand Torah. If we perceive that it could be possible for an arrogant person to learn and contain Torah and to transmit that Torah, if we believe that's possible, even if we don't believe it's normal, but if we believe it's possible, that means we don't understand what Torah is. Because the Rambam has said, Torah is something which cannot be, it cannot live there. And just as if you think you can find collections of waters on high slopes, you don't understand what water is, you don't understand what a flowing liquid is. So if you think the Torah can be found in highly people, you know that you don't understand what Torah is. And that's what we need to try and understand. What is it about Torah that doesn't allow it to be found in haughty people? And what happens if a person starts off modest and learns a lot of Torah? Day and night, for 25 years he learns Torah. And then he gets arrogant. What happens to his Torah? Does he lose it? Is it no longer Torah? What happens to it? And he's got a wonderful memory. He doesn't forget anything. So what are you going to say? Yesterday it was Torah and today it's not Torah? What's happened to it? So we need to understand that principle. In the latest year we've been dealing with the succession of Eliyahu Hanovi by his Talmid Elisha. We find that on Eliyahu's last day alive, he's walking with Elisha through various towns, and the Nevi'im of those towns, for there were many Nevi'im in those days, the Nevi'im of those towns say to Elisha, Hayodato ki hayoim Hashem lokeach es adonecho mi'al reshecho. Do you know that today Hashem is taking your master away from you? Which means they knew. How did they know? They were Nevi'im. So they're great people. Why do they say your master and not our master? Eliyahu Hanavi. Very nice. He said, you know that Hashem is taking your master from you. Our master. Says Rashi, v'lo adonenu. They didn't say our master. Melamed, says Rashi, an amazing thing. Shehoyu shekulim ke'eliyahu. They were as great as Eliyahu. He's not their master. They were equals. So that means that there were hundreds, or at least 100 referred to over here, of Nevi'im at that time, of prophets at that time, each one equivalent to Eliyahu in Nevuah. Such a time, can you imagine such a thing? And Elisha is not equivalent to Eliyahu. Elisha is a Talmud. And that's why they say to him, your master is going to die today. Not our master, he's our friend, he's our colleague. Your master is being taken from us today. Why then, the ladies ask, does Elisha succeed Eliyahu and not one of them? That means Elisha is the most junior of all of them. What is it about the succession which makes it go to Elisha rather than to Eliyahu? We trace back the first meeting between Eliyahu and Elisha, where Eliyahu finds Elisha plowing the field and he walks past and gestures to Elisha that he's got a vacancy for a Talmid, and Elisha jumps at it, and he pays off his workers, he shechts all the animals that were plowing, and he brings korbanos, and he lets the workers eat the meat. Vayakom vayelech achre Eliyahu, and he got up and went after Eliyahu, vayeshor sehu, and he served him. And the Gemara learns from this and other cases of Elisha, Godol Shimusho Yosef Milimuda. We see from here that Shimush, which we translated as apprenticeship, is greater than learning. There is more that can be achieved through apprenticeship than they can through learning. Why? What is this concept of Shimush? Shimush is something which until recently used to be a normal part of the Torah education. And it used to take place in one of two ways. Either the Ben Torah came from a family of Talmidei Chachomim, in which case he was Meshamish his father or his grandfather. And Shimush can, we're going to understand Shimush on different levels. But starting at the bottom, Shimush can be taken at the very basic of levels, which means being a servant. Just serving. We have to understand how that can be greater than learning. But such Shimush would exist then in the houses of grew up. Children grew up in the houses of great Rabbonim. As the children of the great Rabbonim, as the grandchildren of great Rabbonim, they breathed it, they breathed Torah from the day they were born. And they had that relationship, they had Shimush. When a young man used to take smicha in those days also, he used to very often move in with the Rav for a couple of years, and learn with the Rav, obviously, be trained by him, be polished up by him, and be watched by him. So that during that time, he also acquired the opportunity of seeing the Rav close at work. Today, that's lacking a little bit in Torah education, for a number of reasons. One reason might be that the ratio of students to Rabbein is so different. There are so many more Talmidim per great Gedolei Yisrael, it's not possible. In Shimush, a Rebbe can handle one or two at a time, that's all he can handle. And there are just hundreds and thousands of Talmidim per Gedolei Yisrael. We're living in a generation, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending which way one looks at it, where our leadership is sparse, and the Talmidim, Baruch Hashem, they're very, very many, and growing all the time. So while that increases the quantity of Torah, this element of shimush status. Why is the shimush so important? In terms of limud Torah, you need to understand what is it that we're missing out on. I think I've mentioned to you before a Hakadoma of Shimon Shkop, that I haven't done it with the entire Gemara. Shimon Shkop, in his introduction to his Sefer, the Shaila Yosha, explains this Gemara in the name of his brother-in-law. The Gemara in Bava Kamma discusses an interesting question. Rav Chisda le Rami Bar Chana. Rav Chisda said to Rami Bar Chana, Loi havyes gaban beulte bitchume beibayelan milim al yaseh. He says, you weren't with us in the Beis HaMedrash when a very interesting and important matter was asked. Omar mai milim al yaseh. So he said, what was this important thing that was discussed? Omar lein, he said to him, Hadar b'chatzer chaveiroi shalim lidato, sorich lahalis l'scharo ein sorich. If a person has a house which he doesn't rent out, the house is standing empty, and a man comes along and he sleeps in the house overnight, goes in, finds the door open, sleeps there. Does he have to pay rent for the night or not? On the one hand, he can say, the house was empty, it cost you nothing. On the other hand, the balabos can say, did you save money? You had to rent a room, you would have rented a room, you used my room, you better pay me what you would have paid in rental. That was the question that was being discussed. Amalei, he said to him, must listen he. But this is a Mefurisha Mishnah, this is an explicit Mishnah. What was the big discussion? So he said to him, hey, must listen, it's interesting, which Mishnah are you referring to? Now we discussed on Friday night, you'll remember, that when the Chachomim learn, they don't learn the obvious. When he says that there's a Mefurisha Mishnah, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu saw something foolish in the prophet which others didn't see. It's a matter they see the Mishnah as a general principle. And he, in his understanding, Rami Bar Chana, in his understanding of the Mishnah, understands the principle and understands the question of this peculiar case of the rental overnight. And he realizes that the two match together. So he says, which Mishnah is it? And he answers a very strange thing. Honorably, he says, L'chita Shah Mishnah. Ha! You want to know what Mishnah it is? You better do something for me, then I'll tell you. Shokal Sudre. So he realized he was serious. So immediately he didn't enter his mind that he wasn't serious. Shokal Sudre Chorachle. So he took the talus of Rabbi Bar Chana and he folded it up. Omar then said, this is the Mefurish of Mishnah, our Mishnah in Bava Kamma. If an animal is walking through the street and it eats somebody's food in the street, in public property, then he doesn't have to pay the damage he caused. He only pays the benefit he got. In other words, let's say I left a pile of food in the street, and now that this ass of somebody else has eaten the pile of food, it causes me a terrible loss, because the time it's going to take me to go and replenish the food, I'm going to lose a major business deal. So it's cost me R1,000. But the owner of the donkey has only benefited R20, because that's all the amount the food was worth. If he wanted to go and buy the food somewhere else, he would have paid R20. Says Rami Bar Chana, you see, the principle is we go after the benefit and not after the cost, not after the damage. And therefore, the fact that I lost nothing by having you sleep in my premises overnight doesn't mean that you don't have to pay. You benefited in regard to benefit. Whether it's more or less than the damages, doesn't matter, the damages are irrelevant. That's what we learn in the Mishnah. You'll remember if Shimon Shkop asks, what's the folding of the talus got to do with this? And he answers that it's very difficult to attribute a lack of understanding to oneself. One needs a great deal of humility to attribute a lack of understanding to oneself. The immediate reaction, if one doesn't understand something, is to assume that the other person doesn't know what he's talking about. The immediate reaction. He's talking nonsense or he hasn't explained it well. To actually say to oneself, my goodness, I better work on this. He said something and I haven't grasped it fully. I better revise it. I better revise it again. I better think it through. I'd better analyze it. That requires great humility. Because to be willing to spend time and effort to understand clearly something that somebody else is saying means a degree of self-nullification, means a degree of bitter. And this is something which applies, unfortunately, in all forms of communication. We're not even talking about chokhmah necessarily. Sometimes just to understand what your child is saying to you needs a little bit of thought. You've got to figure out. The language is a little bit different. The usage of words is a little bit different. And the tendency is to regard it as nonsense. And one has to have a great degree of chokhmah and humility to stop a moment and start analyzing what is the kid saying, what does he mean? How much more so when an adult is talking? How much more so when an intelligent adult is talking? When you haven't understood, it's a sign. An intelligent person sees that as a sign there might be a great chiddush here. I didn't understand it right away, so either it means he's talking nonsense, or it means there's something new for me, something which I haven't grasped before. Let me understand it, let me analyze, let me find out, what is this man saying? It might be exciting, it might be revolutionary. And you question, you query, and you analyze, and you think, and you revise to understand. But that means you're showing him an awful lot of kovod, a great deal of honor. Go to a person 2 days later and say, you know, we're standing at the bus stop the other day, and this is what you said, and I've been thinking about it, and I didn't understand, did you mean this, or did you mean that? He'll be bowled over his feet. He didn't know that anybody takes anything so seriously that he says. Showing him a great deal of kovod. But that's the way to extract meaning out of what people are saying. And if people are unintelligent, we shouldn't waste time listening to them. But if they're intelligent, then it's quite possible that with their brains and their minds and their experiences, they have grasped and are endeavoring to communicate something which you're finding difficult to understand simply because you've never thought of it before. It's new to you. Or because you're not as intelligent as he is. And that needs self-nullification. Chachamah was worried that Rav Chisda would say when he says, I'm a Purusha Mishnah, what is it? If the animal benefits from the food in the street, it must pay what it's food. Nonsense, that's a different subject. That's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. I'm talking about houses, and you're talking about animals. Don't waste my time. Rami Bar Chama wants to be sure that Rav Chisda is going to attribute enough intelligence and enough depth to what Rav Chisda is saying to warrant analysis before rejection, to warrant clarity and a search for clarity before throwing it out of hand. And he says, let me see, if you're willing to work for me, then you'll take what I'm saying seriously enough. He holds up his talents, that shows good, fine, now we can talk. Now I'll explain to you, I'll know that you value me sufficient. It wasn't infradict for you to fold my talents, therefore it won't be infradict for you to listen to me carefully. So number one is a test. One can go further though, and one can say it also puts a person into a certain mode. When you're relating to somebody in a subservient sense, and I don't by subservient mean it in a negative way at all, I mean it like this. When one is relating to somebody in a subservient sense, one's ears are all open in a different way to when one isn't. When the managing director speaks, the tea boy listens differently. Why? He's subservient to him. So he listens. He tries to understand what the fellow wants. One of his colleagues speaks, he doesn't listen the same way. What's the difference? It's not just because it's important to him, because his job depends on that. Even if it's not. Even if the managing director is speaking about the weather, he listens carefully, tries to understand what the boss is saying. Why? Because the mode is one which is conducive to proper communication. And so Rabbi Bar Chama gets Rav Chisda into the right mode to be able to be mekabel for him, to be able for him to accept something sufficiently clearly to warrant the analysis and the research that a clear understanding would require. And that's the first level of shimush. The first level of shimush is that when one's relating to a God who will be Yisrael, that one relates to him with shimush, one does simple little things for him, one brings him a cup of tea, one gives him a lift, one ties his shoelaces, one does whatever one can do. Why? Why is Godel Mishimusha Yosei Buddha? Why can one learn more that way? Because the mode is then open. Then one's relationship is defined in such a way that one's ready. And anything he says is precious. Anything he says one listens to with great concentration, and one thinks about and analyzes before one casts it aside into the back spaces of one's memory or completely outside of one's mind. That's the one level of shimush. There's another level of shimush. There's a fascinating Gemara in Brochus, the end of the 7th Perek, which discusses, in the middle of the 7th Perek in Daf Mem Zayin, which discusses what is an Amoritz. An Amoritz is not exactly a favored character in the Gemara. And the Gemara has a lot of unpleasant things to say about an Amoritz and how we relate to him. The Gemara goes through discussing what is an Amoritz. So one view is Kol she'ein o'yichel chulov betaro. A person who doesn't eat, even if it's chulin, ordinary food, but he isn't betaro, he hasn't washed himself properly, that's an Amoritz. The Chachamim say anybody who doesn't take ma'aser properly, it's an Amoritz. Interesting, we're defining an Amoritz now not in terms of the volume of their knowledge, but in terms of the importance of detailed halacha to their conduct. A person who's learning values halacha and keeps it. A person who's learning properly. A person who's not learning might know all the dinim. So this Amoritz can be very frum. He can know all the laws, and he can keep Shabbos and Kashrus and all the things, just little things there and there, the little things he doesn't keep. Why is he not keeping the little things? Because he's not involved in learning. It's not important to him. When one's involved in learning, Torah is important, Halacha is important, Shulchan Aruch is important. When one's not involved in learning, nothing is terribly important. So one does what one is used to doing. If one saw Shabbos being kept, one keeps Shabbos. If one saw Kashrus being kept, one keeps Kashrus. But the little things one starts becoming weak on. Gemara goes on. Kol she'eino kore Kriya Shema Arvis v'Shachris, a person who doesn't read Kriya Shema every evening and morning. Rabbi Yeshua says anybody who doesn't put on tefillin, anybody who doesn't wear tzitzis, anybody who doesn't have a mezuzah, different definitions. Somebody has children and doesn't educate them in Torah. Achirim oimrim, others say, afilu koro v'shono, even if he learned Torah, v'shono, and he's a boki, he knows it all the mishnayos, he knows the whole of Shas. B'loi shimish talmidei chachomim, and he did not serve Tamidei Chachomim, Harei Zeh Amoritz. That's an Amoritz. When we learned this with the ladies, they got quite a shock. So what do we do? Does that mean we're all Amoratzim? What chance have we got? Says Rashi, what does Beshamish Tamidei Chachomim mean? Doesn't take it literally. Says Shimish Tamidei Chachomim, who are Gemara? That means learning Gemara. Hatzaluya b'svora, Gemara depends on logic. Show you noisnim the divrei Mishnah Tam. They used to give reasons for the Mishnayos. Now we need to understand why is that called Shimush Tamidei Chachamim. Rashi has defined what Gemara is. Gemara is giving rationale to the Mishnahs, because the Mishnahs don't give any reasons. The Mishnahs are statements. A case, a halacha. This is what happened. This is what the din is. Next Mishnah. This is what happened. This is what the din is. This is what happened. This is very brief statements of a case and the law. That's it. No reasons given. No philosophy given. Nothing. Gemara is we start taking the Mishnah. We start figuring out why is it and what's the difference between this Mishnah and this Mishnah. And why is the halacha like this here and the halacha like that is there. And understands and makes similarities and draws distinctions. And makes the Mishnahs intelligent. Because the Mishnahs as they stand are on the surface unintelligent. It's the Gemara that gives reasons to them and makes the Mishnayos intelligent. Why is that called Shimush Tamidei Chachamim? Why doesn't Rashi take it literally? With this Shimon Shkop, we understand the Rashi. To make what somebody else says intelligent is part of the Shimush. An apprentice will make what his Balabos is saying sound intelligent. He'll work on it until it is. If the mode is right, then if he says something which on the surface doesn't seem to have any reason, you don't discard it. Then you sit and you work on it and work on it until you do, until you're able to explain it. The Gemara is subservient to the mission. The effort the Gemara goes to give reason and rationale to the Mishnahs, shows the mode of relationship and the esteem that the Gemara held the Mishnah in and the Bali Mishnah. As we learned over Yom Tov, the effort that the Noda Behuda goes to explain a Rambam, that shows the complete hisbatlus, the complete self-nullification of the later generation to the earlier generation. And if one doesn't have that, you have people, for example, that say, Gemara, I don't want to get involved in it. I want to learn the Mishnayos. I want to learn Halacha. I want to know what the law is. I want to know. Leave me alone with all the Gemara. That's an Amhoritz. And the Gemara says in the end, by the way, this is the view of the Acherim, you remember, the others. Omer Avuna Halacha Ka Acherim. We pass them like the Acherim. That's an Amhoritz. A person who learns Chumash and Tanakh and Mishnayos and Dinim, but is not excelling in Gemara, we call him an Amhoritz. He knows, doesn't matter. But he's not bispatel. If he really valued the Tanoim, if he really valued the authors of the Mishnah, he wouldn't be able to sleep at night until he'd done the Gemara on it. What are they saying? What does it mean? Why is it? What's the depth of what they say? And he would learn the Gemara and he wouldn't be able to sleep until he'd done the Rashi and the Tosfos. And he'd learn the Rashi and the Tosfos and he would need to go further. Each generation, as we perceive a glimpse of what they're saying, we have a need to understand it more deeply, because we cannot believe, we cannot live with the belief that these people said something superficial. And if I say to you something over the, in the name of a very deep person, if I tell you something in the name of it, what the Rambam said? I said, yeah, what did the Rambam say? I said, the Rambam said, Jews should love one another. That's this great Rambam, that's what he said. Do we need the Rambam for that? And if you're able to say, ah, interesting, that's what the Rambam said, good, carry on talking, that means that you're an Amoritz. You're prepared to attribute superficiality to the Rambam. That's what it means. I'll tell you, now what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that at night it gets dark. So, ah, interesting, good. Please together, didn't know the Gemara. And you're prepared to carry on living normally. That means you don't value the Gemara. You're prepared to accept, it's no steroid, you're prepared to accept superficiality in the name of the Gemara. It doesn't present a problem to you at all. I find it amazing over and over again to see what superficiality people are prepared to accept. To what degree people are prepared to accept superficiality. From contemporaries, and certainly even more astonishingly, from earlier people. And sometimes somebody can get up and he can give a Devar Torah and he can quote a Medrash and explain the Medrash in such a superficial way, in such an empty way, and everybody says, you should care about it. That's an insult. The man has explained the Medrash like it's Aesop's fables, and at the end of that you can say you should care. That shows where you hold the Medrash. It doesn't show where you hold the person who said it over. It shows where you hold the Medrash. A person can say over a Gemara, can teach a piece of Gemara, and there's nothing in it. Reading, translation, this, that, nothing in it. You say, ah, nice, see you tomorrow, we'll do the next step tomorrow. One can accept that. That shows a total lack of understanding of the godliness of the greatness of those generations. And therefore Rashi says, Gemara is Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. That's what it means to subject yourself, to go through the sweat and toil of pages and pages of Gemara, of hours and days and weeks of analysis and learning, in order to give pshat in one line of a Mishnah. That's Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. And if a person doesn't go through that experience, he's an Amhoritz, no matter how much knowledge he has, no matter how much he knows, if he isn't going through the experience of complete self-nullification in order to give reason to something which an earlier generation has said, then he has the din of an Amhoritz. So that's the second level of Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. Not where you just serve the Talmid Chochem in a physical sense, and not apprentice to him, but where you serve him in an intellectual sense. Where when he says something, you find it necessary to perceive the depth in what he's saying, because you're not prepared to accept that he could be saying something which you understand easily. If he's saying it and you understand it easily, you know you haven't understood it. It's something you're missing. Because he's from an earlier generation, he's deep, and he's great, and therefore if he says it, we need to battle over it. If we're not battling it, over it, lawyer, gati, I didn't, it wasn't so difficult. People come out of the Rosh Hashiva Shir and you say, how was it today? It was easy today. But you know, Lo Shimish Tamid HaChacham. Understand the Shir, he didn't. Not possible. Lo Yogati and Mitzvasi, either it wasn't Torah, either the Shiva wasn't talking Torah, he was telling stories, or it's not possible. But if he in his depth was teaching Torah, we must battle to understand it, otherwise it doesn't make sense. That's Shimush Tamid HaChacham. And that was Elisha. Elisha, the man who chose to serve Eliyahu in both these senses of Shimush. And in fact, just by the way, in the Lady Shir, we took that a step further. We learned the most beautiful Akedah. Eliyahu calls Elisha and says, I'm about to die. Your last wish, what can I do for you? And Elisha asks for a big deal. He says, I want you to continue teaching me after you die. I want to continue the relationship. So Eliyahu says, that's tough. That's very hard. It's going to be hard for you. I can teach you, that's not difficult, but how are you going to learn from me? You're going to be a physical being, with all your kind of physical interests and involvement, I'm totally spiritual. How are you going to relate to me? So Eliyahu says, I'll tell you what. If you see me being taken away from you, then it will work. You'll succeed. And the Akedah says it doesn't just mean if you see me being taken away from you. Of course he's going to see him being taken away from you. They're walking together. And any minute he's going to be taken away, of course he'll see. What does it mean if you see me being taken away from you? Says the Akedah, if you will see the loss, if you will really feel that I have been taken away from you, then I will be able to continue teaching you. What does that mean? Sometimes the tendency after the death is, particularly in that kind of relationship, for Elisha to say, look, the king is dead, long live the king. Now we get started again, I'm boss now. Says Elisha, if you do that, there's no way I can continue relating to you the way we did in the past. Because in the past, you were mid-battle to me, you were mishamish me. That's why you learned so much. Once I'm gone, if you're going to feel that you're the boss, if you're not going to feel the wrench, if you're not going to feel the sense of loss, you're not going to be able to carry on learning from me. Because a condition of learning Torah is a sense of subservience, is a sense of you're sitting at my feet, and if I've gone and you think that the world carries on the same with or without me, that means you don't value me, the same as Rami Bar Chamon Rav Chisto. If you don't value me, you can't continue learning from me. But if you do, you'll succeed. And I said, that's part of the understanding of Shiva, of mourning. Why do we mourn for dead people? Not just because we've lost them. We're not mourning because we're sorry for them. They're better off. So what are we mourning for? If we want to continue a relationship with them, where we continue learning from them, where we see them in perspective, where we continue gaining from them, where we get greater insight into who they really were, if we wanted them to continue growing in stature in our minds, we need to experience a sense of loss. But if they go and we feel, oh, okay, it's all over, but the poor old man, he was sick a long time, he's better off where he is, on with life, then there's no way that any relationship can continue to exist after that. The mourning is the guarantee of a continued process of learning, of a feeling that I've lost him. There's something that I don't have anymore. And that facilitates the ongoing process. That was the relationship between Elisha and Eliyahu. It's interesting also that the Medrash just before this brings the most amazing thing about Moshe Rabbeinu. Nadav and Avihu bring a korban, and they don't eat from the korban. Aaron doesn't eat from the korban because he's an oinei. He's just lost his two sons. Says the Medrash that Moshe looked for the korban to find out what had happened to it. Miyad vayiktsof al Elozor v'alitzono. When he heard that the korban had been burnt and not eaten, he got angry with Elozor and Itzono. And then the Torah goes on to say that Aaron defends them and says to Moshe, "You're wrong. They did the right thing. The animal was supposed to be burnt under these circumstances." What about Moshe? Didn't he know the din too? Says the Medrash, "Vekivan shekoas." This almo mimenu halacha. Since he became angry, the understanding of a particular halacha was blocked. He didn't see that halacha. But it says it happened 3 times to Moshe. This anger has the power to cause a loss of Torah. We asked a little bit earlier, what happens if a person becomes arrogant at the later stage? What happens to his Torah? It's possible, as in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, who, by the way, was onov mikol adam, let us not forget, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself gives evidence that there was never anyone so modest as Moshe and so humble as Moshe. He knows the whole Torah with absolute clarity. He's the source of all that Torah. He gets angry for a moment. You can imagine on his level what anger was. It would be something that was totally undetectable. But the Torah says on Moshe's level that was a touch of anger. And that minuscule touch of anger causes him to forget the halacha. Not to fully understand something which Aaron understood, Nadav understood, and Avihu understood. The three of them, who weren't as great as he in Torah, they understood it clearly. Moshe missed it. Why? Became angry. See again and again how the character of a person, not only the long term, not only the permanent character of a person, but even the temporary character of a person, the mood in which he is now, affects the greatness of his Torah. Not only do you have to be a great person to have great Torah, but you have to be a great person at all times to have great Torah. And if you're missing in greatness for a moment, at that moment you're missing Torah. That's the amazing. Chaos, anger is one of the midas which the Rambam says the Torah has no place for at all. There are only two midas, only two characteristics, which one isn't permitted to use at all. One, says the Rambam, is arrogance, and the other is anger. And that's not coincidental, because the two are connected. The Gemara says in the Dorim, Rabbi says, Kol HaKoyis, anybody who gets angry, he doesn't even regard the Shekhinah, God's presence, he doesn't even regard as very important. Anger and arrogance, chaos and gaiva, are very closely related. But why is it that anger, particularly this kind of anger, what was Moshe angry at? That a halacha, in his opinion, wasn't being observed properly. That's what he was angry at. Why should that cause a loss of knowledge? We have to see anger and arrogance in a similar vein. Both of them are sensitivity blockages. In both cases, when a person is angry, for example, lost his temper, is angry, he is not sensitive to what's happening around him. There's no input. At the time that he's angry, there's only self-expression. There's only output. You don't notice what other people are saying, you don't notice what other people are thinking, you don't notice what other people are feeling. You are totally oblivious to your surroundings, which enables you to do things like drunkenness. You do things which in a normal rational state it would never enter your mind to do. Why do you do them? Because you've lost touch with your environment. There's no input at all from your environment. You're totally detached. And there's all this anger inside you and you let it out. And while it's going out, nothing comes in. It's such an outpouring of emotion that it leaves no place for any sensitivity. Sensitivity is the allowance of input to be open to noticing what's happening around you, to receiving messages. While you're angry, you're a transmitter, you're not a receiver. And you can't be a transmitter and a receiver simultaneously. You have to reduce the level of transmission to increase the level of reception. And when there's chaos, there is only transmission, there is no reception. And arrogance is the same. An arrogant, a self-centered person is a person who is not receiving. He is busy transmitting, expounding his views. He is busy telling the world, either verbally or in his imagination, telling the world exactly what he thinks about everything. But having his eyes open to learn from others, to hear what others have to say, because that might be important, that is not capable of doing. The Baal Gaiva can't do that. What's important is the Torah is not something that appears from this medrash. Torah is not something which can be caught. You know, it's a little bit like the story of the men of Helm. When they saw the moon, and they figured out how they're going to catch the moon. Remember the story? And they think, you know, when there's a barrel of water, you see the moon in the water. So they can bring the moon down to earth that way. And they go and they fetch a barrel and they fill it with water. They see the moon reflected in it and they slam the lid on the barrel. Oh, now they've got the moon. Expecting to find the moon there the next morning. Isn't there the next morning. as long as the lid is open and the light rays are being reflected down or being transmitted to the water, you'll see the moon there. The moment you block that, the moon's gone. Torah is not sourced from within us. Torah, unlike any other knowledge, unlike any other discipline, is sourced from without us. And we mustn't treat it like a secular discipline, thinking, I can open my receivers, get the Torah, and then close up the station and it's all inside me. That's thinking like the men of Chel. As long as the station's open and beams are being transmitted, the Torah's there. The moment the transmitted station is closed, one loses the Torah. The batteries start running down. Little by little, one starts forgetting. One loses sharpness. One loses clarity. One might remember the more of the form, more or less, but the vitality, the sophistication, the detail, the subtle reasoning, that one starts losing the moment there's no input. And that's why Eliyahu says to Elisha, if you will be able to feel the lot, then your stations are open, you're open to reception, I'll be able to communicate with you. If you don't feel the loss, don't think you'll keep what you had. If you don't feel the loss, you'll have nothing. And so it was with Moshe Rabbeinu's calf. On his level, we can't understand it. We can't picture Moshe Rabbeinu getting angry. We can't cut the shoulder and picture Moshe Rabbeinu in a state of emotion which even resembles arrogance. And yet, Chazal wants us to learn from that. Chazal said he did get angry and he was punished for it. So as difficult, as impossible as it is for us to understand what it means, the facts are there and we need to learn from that. That for a brief, fleeting moment, Moshe Rabbeinu had a minuscule little tiny quantity, an indetectable quantity. Only the Yodea Talubus, the Ribbono Shel Olam, who knows the inner secrets of a human being, is able to detect that there was a moment of anger. But that moment of anger was enough to cause him to lose sight of the halacha, which juniors knew and took for granted. But he knew much more than them, and his memory was better than them. How could it have gone? That's what character can do. Even a moment of bad character, but even a moment of bad character can block the input. And if the input is being blocked, one starts to lose what one's got. When we don't come to a shiur for a period of time, not good. I've got what I've got, and now I'm taking a break, and I'll carry on in a few weeks' time. No. If there isn't fresh input all the time, if one isn't learning and constantly exposing oneself to new and to fresh input, one deteriorates. The batteries run down. One can't keep, you can't close the lid of the barrel and expect to find the moon there afterwards. That can't be done. That explains the Medrash. The Ribbono Shel Olam measured. What was he measuring? What's the lotion of measuring? Let me read to you, as I did to the ladies this morning, this beautiful line or two of description by the Chaim Volozhiner of his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, and he writes this in his Hakdoma to Shnos Eliyahu. Shnos Eliyahu is a parish of the Vilna Gaon on Seder Zroim, and in there's an introduction by the Chaim Volozhiner, and the Chaim says, Ki yose shehoyo rabbeinu hagodol, eshko godol shebegadolim. More important than the excellence of Rabbeinu of the Vilna Gaon in his greatness in learning, great among the great, yose, even more outstanding, hoyo nomus v'shofel bedatoi mikol odom asher al pnei ha'adomo mamish. And I said to the ladies that the Chaim Volozhiner, there's no exaggeration in his lotion. There's no wasted words. Listen to the words he uses. More outstanding than the Vilna Gaon's brilliance, which everybody knows about, was the lowliness of his own opinion of himself vis-a-vis every other human being on the face of the world, mamish, in reality, absolutely. He viewed himself as less than them. What does it mean less than them? He knew that he was the Vilna Gaon after all, but what's he feeling himself? But he knew also that everybody had something which he didn't have. That every human being has his own little something that he can teach, his own way of looking at things, his own experiences, and therefore he saw himself as able to learn from every human being. And then he says the following phrase, Al gabov yordu mayim amukim Lemokoyim Omuk Omuk. And upon him there flowed vast volumes of water to a place deep, deep down. What the Chaim Volozhin is telling us here is that the depth of learning is a factor of one's humility. You can understand it in the light of the Shir of the Soul, one can begin to understand. We've just talked about flow in general, so it's like water. Water doesn't flow on a level and it doesn't flow up. The only way water flows is down. So if I want to learn from you, the only way I can learn from you is to see myself as less than you during the time, at least during the time that I'm learning from you. I've got to put myself beneath you. If you're expressing an opinion and I really want to understand your opinion, I've got to put myself in a position where I'm your Talmud, where I'm your student and you're teaching and I'm going to analyze what you're saying. Otherwise there's no point in it. You're either telling me something so simple that I don't need to think about it, in which case, as we've said, it's a waste of time. And if you're expressing an opinion which is valuable to me and which might be new to me, I've got to submit myself to you. I've got to put myself beneath you so that the water can flow downwards, because the water will not flow on an equal. And that's the beauty of good chavrusas. They're like a seesaw. And they're consciously oscillating. One moment one is sitting there like the Talmud and the other one's teaching. And then there's a reversal and the other one. But they're never equal. They're always teaching one another. And the dynamics of the chavrusa is like the seesaw operation, and it moves sometimes at a great speed, the velocity between teaching and learning. But when a chavrusa is learning, you go into a yeshiva and you see a chavrusa learning. When the one is saying something to the other, you see him concentrating and listening and really making an effort. And 2 minutes later you walk around and he, the one who was listening so humbly, is now lambasting the other one, who's listening carefully to what he's saying. That's Nagin Kovid Zebezer. That's the mutual respect that people need to give one another if they want to understand what one another is saying. But the Chaim Volozhin goes further and he says that the depth of understanding is a factor of the degree of humility. And because the Vilna Gaon was so unbelievably humble, he says the water flowed into deep, deep places. The lower down you are, not just the more thoroughly there is, the deeper the Torah is. So one has to picture one's personality, not like the question of where am I. One mustn't view oneself as a fat, flat plate and try and figure out what level is this plate. One has to view oneself as a cylinder with a movable bottom. And one is determining at what level the bottom, the floor of the cylinder is. And the lower the floor is, that doesn't mean the lower I go. The lower the floor, the more I can absorb. That's what it means. The more I lower the floor of that cylinder, the bigger I become, not the smaller I become. And that's the chiddush of this way of looking at ourselves. Whereas normally we think of ourselves in a two-dimensional sense. And we think, well, if I blow myself onto the floor, what, am I going to be a doormat, you say? A doormat is a flat thing. If I'm low, people will stand on me. We're talking of a doormat. We're talking of a cylinder. A human being is a cylinder. The top of the cylinder goes up to Shemayim. That's where the top is. And we're talking about lowering yourself, we're talking about lowering the floor. Who can stand on you? They're walls, the walls go higher. Who can stand on you because you're low? All you're making sure is the Torah can flow in. You're making sure that the dynamics and the levels are such that the Torah can flow in. You're making sure that you can contain more. You're becoming bigger by lowering yourself. The volume of your container is increasing with every inch that you're able to lower yourself. That's the beauty of the Torah personality. As he increases his humility, so the volume of his wisdom, and as Reb Chaim Volozhin says, Omuk, Omuk Ma'id, the depth increases. The Torah goes down more deeply, and one's able to achieve those levels of depth. So when the Medrash says that the Ribbono Shel Olam measured before he decided who could get the Torah, what was he measuring? How low the floor of the cylinder is. What the volume of the container is. Is this container big enough for the Torah or isn't it? He had to measure. And he found only the Dor HaMidbar, says the Medrash. Only that generation who knew what it is to nullify yourself. That generation who knew what it was to be humble, who'd been trained for hundreds of years to be humble and to be small and to subject themselves to the opinions of others. Only such a generation, Dor HaMidbar, were measured as having a capacity big enough to be able to receive the Torah. People often ask, particularly around Pesach time, why that generation? They were so low in Mitzrayim, so low. And they get the Torah? Good, by the time they got the Torah, they were very high.
That was with the help of the Ribon Shalom. Why were they the generation? Says the Medrash, because they were the biggest, because they were the most humble. Humility expands the personality, doesn't contract it. And which mountain? Har Sinai. Chazal tell us was the smallest of the mountains. Again, he wanted another, he wanted humility. Yerushalayim, for the Beis HaMikdash, a city with Horim Soviv Lor, surrounded by mountains. It's not like Masada, a mountain on top of a hill and everything around it flat. Yerushalayim is a hill among hills, no chance for arrogance. Some of the hills are higher, no chance for arrogance. That's the devotional measure to see which is the lower one, where is the place most suitable for us. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam sees and teaches that it's in humility that the volume is increased. It's in humility that capacity is able to be developed. And so we see that character is not only a consequence of Torah. Sometimes we get disappointed when we see by their Torah, we see people have learned Torah whose behavior doesn't come up to our expectations. We get disappointed and disillusioned. We need to understand it doesn't work that way around. It's not that the Torah makes fine people. It's that only fine people can understand the Torah. That's the way around. And that's why Derech Eretz Kodmo LaTorah, one has to be a mensch before one starts learning Torah. It doesn't come afterwards. If one's a mensch to start with, Torah defines one further. Torah teaches one still more humility. And therefore the Gemara says, the Torah is Sam HaChayim L'mayiminim Bo, the Sam HaMovis L'masmirim Bo. Torah is either life-giving or it's poison. It's not neutral. An arrogant person who learns Torah becomes more arrogant. A humble person who learns Torah becomes more humble. And it's so easy to understand why now. An arrogant person opens the Rambam, looks at it, reads it, understands it, and says, ah, posh it. Next one, what are we doing next? That's how he does. A person who learns at a great speed, even. Someone learns, goes through an Omud of Gemara, a Daf of Gemara, in half an hour, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. Did you understand it? Sure, I understood it. What does that mean? That means either I'm a genius, or it means, you know, can you read Reader's Digest at 600 words a minute? So what's the Gemara any different? It means one of the two. How is it possible to take something as deep as Torah, something one has to slog and sweat over, and rush through it with the foolish opinion afterwards that I might even have understood it? There's only one way. I have to be pretty arrogant. And my arrogance is reinforced with every additional onward idea. Every additional page I learn kills me, it buries me even deeper beneath the pile of my own arrogance. If I think that that's feasible, read through a piece of Rambam, read through a process, yes, understand it. That means I am so superior, and this is such easy stuff, that there's really not much difficulty involved. But when a modest person comes, looks at the Rambam, and he says, my goodness, I appear to understand this Rambam, what's wrong? That's how the modest person looks at it. I better learn it again. And he learns it again. It still seems simple, but if it's so simple, surely the Rambam wouldn't bother saying it. And he looks at it again. And he looks at the source, he looks at the Gemara from which it comes, and he learns through the Gemara. He says, my goodness, but where does the Rambam see this in the Gemara? And then starts the sweating to him. And then start the late nights. And then start the early mornings. And then start the pacing up and down and not being able to take his mind off it. That even when he goes to the bathroom, he's got to take something else to read with him so that he doesn't for a moment think, because he can't stop thinking about the difficult Rambam. 2 weeks later, he chaps the Rambam. What does that do? Is that food for his arrogance? Or is that food for his humility? My goodness, 2 weeks it took me day and night to understand one paragraph? When am I going to finish the whole book? How long is it going to take me to understand this? And then when he's finished it, he works on a Shaygas Aryeh, or on a Ketzes HaChoshen, or as we did on a Noida B'Yehuda. He spends another three painful weeks trying to understand that, and he suddenly realizes that at the end of his first 2 weeks he didn't understand the Rambam yet. What he thought was Pshat in the Rambam after the first 2 weeks was the Shagat Aryeh starting point. And by the time the Shagat Aryeh is finished, which takes him another 6 weeks, now he understands what the Rambam. And then a few weeks later, he happens to be learning something, who quotes the Shagas Aryeh, which he learned, and he's so happy, ah, it's just the Shagas Aryeh I learned. Suddenly he realizes he didn't understand the Shagas Aryeh. That brings humility. Then one begins to understand who we are in relationship to earlier generations. An arrogant person learning Torah becomes more arrogant. A modest person learning Torah becomes more modest. And as he becomes more modest, so his volume is increased. As his volume is increased, his depth is increased. As his depth is increased, he becomes still more modest, and so it goes on. That's the process of growth.